what's wrong with this debate. We're not talking about real issues. And Mr. Trump, we don't need an apprentice in the White House. We don't need an apprentice in the White House. We have one right now.
That was Governor Walker in last night's Republican primary debate, exchanging barbs with Donald Trump. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Bickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Walker came out of the gates swinging last night, accusing Donald Trump of not having clear policies and defending his own record in Wisconsin. But he faded into the background and ultimately came away with the shortest speaking time of any candidate.
The pundits have mostly proclaimed Carly Fiorina the winner of the debate. She was a new presence on the main stage after appearing in the so-called happy hour debate last time around. She won over the crowd with a number of zingers and didn't hesitate to take on Donald Trump.
The debate lasted over 3 hours and involved a lot more back and forth among the candidates than the previous debate. Here with us now to talk about who did well and who did not so well is David Friedlander, contributing writer at The Daily Beast. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get to the person who's been proclaimed the star of the night, Carly Fiorina, let's talk about Wisconsin's own Governor Scott Walker. What was he trying to accomplish when he went into that debate last night?
So I think your governor really just needs to stop the bleeding. I mean, he has had a brutal couple of months. Everyone around him knows it, his donors, his staff. He's gone from being the top of the polls to near the bottom. So I think they were looking for a forceful and crisp performance from him that sort of shows the strength that vaulted him to the top of the polls, you know, in the spring.
And was he able to do it in what turned out to be, according to NPR, the shortest amount of speaking time at last night's debate?
You know, I actually thought he did okay, I mean, to be honest. I mean, I think his staff, if they had a sort of checklist of things they wanted to accomplish, I think Walker probably accomplished most of them. He took on Trump. He talked about his record in Wisconsin. He was aggressive. I think he gave short and crisp answers. But I think he also sort of faded as the debate wore on, and he didn't really have much to say. You sort of forgot he was on stage, I think at points. And some of that was, as you mentioned earlier, you know, this was a debate where really they wanted the candidates to engage with each other and to argue with each other. And they brought up, you know, previous statements that they had said about one another, previous criticisms. And Walker hasn't really done that. He's not a guy who really goes around criticizing and drawing contrast between his own record and that of his fellow candidates. So there wasn't a lot there for them to mine. And also, he has this persona of this sort of Wisconsin nice, right? He's the nice guy, the regular guy in the race. And he's not a kind of cutting, slashing type like Carly Fiorina is. So he wasn't really quite able to rise to her level. But I thought he did okay.
He said today on MSNBC that all of his eggs are in the basket called Iowa. Does that seem like a good strategy? Can he get enough results there to propel him forward? Or does that put too much pressure on his performance in Iowa?
No, I mean, I think that's probably the right strategy. You know, he was leading in Iowa for a long time. He's now cratered, I think, to 2% in the polls or something like that. But it's hard to imagine a Walker path of victory that doesn't go through Iowa, especially it's so close to y'all up there. And, you know, he needs to win Iowa if he's going to win the later states, the New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. The only path through those first four states for him is Iowa.
Now, going into this debate, one of the most highly anticipated interactions was going to be between Carly Fiorina and Donald Trump after he seemingly criticized her looks in an interview. Her response was pretty short. Here's a question and answer.
Ms. Fiorina, I do want to ask you about this. In an interview last week in Rolling Stone magazine, Donald Trump said the following about you. Quote, "Look at that face. Would anyone vote for that? Can you imagine that? The face of our next president." Mr. Trump later said he was talking about your persona, not your appearance. Please feel free to respond what you think about his persona.
You know, it's interesting to me. Mr. Trump said that he heard Mr. Bush very clearly and what Mr. Bush said. I think women all over this country heard very clearly what Mr. Trump said.
Now, with that moment and others in mind, David, what did you make of Carly Fiorina in the debate last night?
Well, you know, this was sort of keyed up for her in a way. I mean, she's a terrific debater. She's a sort of slashing, cutting presence on stage. She takes it right to Hillary Clinton in a way that the other candidates, frankly, can't. And I think it was, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, this was where all of the anticipation was. What's she going to say to Trump? How is she going to respond to this attack of his? And I thought she did so beautifully, frankly. I mean, it was one of the few times you sort of saw Trump flummoxed. and not knowing quite what to say.
On more substantive issues, people have said she came off really solidly for an outsider candidate in particular, somebody who's not an experienced politician particularly, that she came off looking knowledgeable, well-informed on top of issues.
No, I think that's absolutely right. You know, and I think what's interesting here in a way is she's still a real long shot to be the nominee, as is Ben Carson, who's trailing Trump in the polls, as is Trump. I mean, if history is any guide, you know, Republicans sort of tend to get serious as these campaigns get closer, you know, get closer to voting in Iowa and the primary begins. And so she remains a real long shot. And I just wonder if she sort of replaces Trump, if she's the new Trump, then the party is that much further away from coalescing around an eventual nominee who, if history is any guide, is going to be someone from the political class who's got a lot of endorsements and a lot of money, a Jeb Bush, a Scott Walker, a Marco Rubio, a John Kasich, even a Ted Cruz. So we'll have to see how much longer this goes on.
A moment that shot up the charts on Google, according to Google Trends, Carly Fiorina became the most Googled candidate of any during the debate when she shared a personal story about her daughter.
I very much hope that I am the only person on this stage who can say this, but I know there are millions of Americans out there who will say the same thing. My husband Frank and I buried a child to drug addiction. So we must invest more in the treatment of drugs. I agree with Senator Paul. I agree with states' rights. But we are misleading young people when we tell them that marijuana is just like having a beer. It's not. And the marijuana that kids are smoking today is not the same as the marijuana that Jeb Bush smoked 40 years ago. We do. Sorry, Barbara.
A funny moment from a sad moment earlier in there, but a change of pace in a debate that had a lot of rapid back and forth. What did you make of that, David?
I thought it really humanized her in a way, and I think that she probably needs that humanizing. You know, I mean, she was the most aggressive person on that stage until that moment. I mean, she was the one who sort of talked the loudest, the sharpest, the fastest. If you notice, she was constantly interjecting the moderators. She was constantly going over her time. And, you know, she has, in many ways, and it came up a little bit last night, I mean, she has a tough record for a nominee. She's someone who is a CEO, you know, and we know how that worked out with Mitt Romney, but in many ways, she doesn't even really have the business record of Mitt Romney, although she does have the layoff the Democrats are able to tag on him. So I think anything she can do to sort of soften some of those harder edges is probably to her benefit.
Talking to David Friedlander, contributing writer at The Daily Beast, about last night's Republican debate. Call in now with your thoughts, your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. So all this back and forth going on, David, between Fiorina and Trump. And Chris Christie had a moment when he tried to put a stop to it. Let's give a listen.
While I'm as entertained as anyone by this personal back and forth about the history of Donald and Carly's career, for the 55-year-old construction worker out in that audience tonight who doesn't have a job, who can't fund his child's education, I got to tell you the truth. They could care less about your careers. They care about theirs. Let's start talking about that on this stage and stop playing the games. John, I'm not done yet, John.
A track record of leadership is not a game. It is the issue in this election.
Carly, listen. You can interrupt everybody else on this stage. You can't interrupt me. Okay? The fact is that we don't want to hear about your careers back and forth and volleying back and forth about who did well and who did poorly. You're both successful people. Congratulations. You know who's not successful? The middle class in this country who's getting plowed over by Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Let's start talking about those issues tonight and stop this childish back and forth between the two of you.
Ms. Fiorina, I want to get...
Chris Christie had a rough run of things lately, David, for quite a while now among Republican voters. Is this making him, I don't know, look like the adult in the room?
Yeah, well, I thought that was a great answer. And I thought that that was sort of his focus throughout the evening, was like, let's stop talking about us, let's stop squabbling amongst each other, and let's sort of talk about the voters and the American people watching this. I thought Christie, you know, had a great night. I really did. I mean, I think they had a checklist. I bet he hit every single one of the things they wanted to get done last night. You know, if there was, he sort of waded into Fiorina's lane at one point there, and she kind of elbowed him back, which wasn't a great look for him. But otherwise, I thought he had a terrific night.
Is he back on the charts now? A lot of Republican voters suspicious that he's not conservative enough for them.
Yeah, it's hard. So there's still, I mean, it's it's not right to say we're a long way away from voting, but voting's also not tomorrow, right?
Sure.
We're sort of a medium way. You know, voting is in the winter, and we're entering the fall here now. So, you know, he's got a lot of ground to gain. He's just barely hanging on there in 10th or 11th place. I mean, he's one of these guys lucky to be on the stage. So, yeah, I doubt one debate performance or one crisp answer is enough to really, you know, vault him to the top of the pack. But he has a campaign that has some life in it.
Speaking of the top of the pack, in many polls, maybe most polls, Donald Trump has been there. He started off the debate in a way some people saw as odd. He took a swing at Kentucky Senator Rand Paul and then responded to the label of being an entertainer. Here he is.
First of all, Rand Paul shouldn't even be on this stage. He's number 11. He's got 1% in the polls, and how he got up here, there's far too many people. Anyway, as far as temperament, and we all know that, as far as temperament, I think I have a great temperament. I built a phenomenal business with incredible, iconic assets, one of the really, truly great real estate businesses. And I may be an entertainer because I've had tremendous success with number one bestsellers all over the place, with The Apprentice and everything else I've done. But I will tell you this, what I am far and away greater than an entertainer is a businessman. And that's the kind of mindset this country needs to bring it back.
A lot of people have responded to that mindset, that kind of talk. David, did Donald Trump keep up where he had been? Is he nobody's been able to predict him quite right so far, but do you think he'll stay where he is in the polls?
I mean, you know, I think we all have to have given up on what explains the Donald Trump phenomenon a long time ago. I mean, that bubble was supposed to have popped weeks or months ago. Those stories have already been written. I mean, with that, you know, he also had this gratuitous insult about Rand Paul's looks in that answer, which didn't even get to there. Nothing explains why he's doing so well. I mean, you know, that it's self-aggrandizing. It's sophomoric, as it was called in the debate. And somehow people seem to respond to it. You know, whether or not they continue to, I don't know, because it's hard to know what they're responding to now. It's definitely a phenomenon like one we haven't seen before.
Talking to David Friedlander, contributing writer at the Daily Beast, looking at last night's Republican primary debate.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Who do you think emerged victorious, or maybe not so much, last night? Have you made up your mind about any of the candidates? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with David Friedlander, contributing writer at the Daily Beast, talking about last night's Republican primary debate.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Were there ideas that you heard last night that struck you, moments that you thought were telling about a candidate or two? What did you think about the overall style of the debate? Do you want to pick a winner? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers. Kevin is on the line in Hudson. Kevin, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a question with regards to the general consensus is that Trump will at some point fall out. Not sure when. But at that point, he's going to have a lot of followers. It's said that he's got over 3 million just on Twitter. And was it a smart move for Governor Walker to confront Trump last night when, in fact, at some point, he may want to befriend Trump to get those followers.
Kevin,
I'll
thanks.
Take my answer off the air.
Interesting question. David, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Walker maybe tried that for a while and wanted to treat Trump with kid gloves and welcome into the race and all that kind of thing. But as Walker just lost altitude, there was really no other option for him to do other than to try to get some attention by beating back on Trump. And also, like, hoping that phenomenon ends eventually. And I think it's also worth noting that, you know, Ted Cruz mm-hmm. is really the sort of Donald Trump buddy act at this point, and he seems, if anyone, poised to inherit that mantle. But, you know, I don't know if politics really quite works that way, that, you know, you were able to just sort of drop out, but you have this large number of supporters that you could then hand over to one of your colleagues.
And thanks for the call, Kevin. I think conventional wisdom that Donald Trump was bluffing and wouldn't actually announce a campaign ever. But here he is.
It's defying everything we know about politics, the whole Donald Trump thing. I mean, I thought he sounded like a Democratic plant last night. He was using the Democrats' talking points against Walker, against Bush, against Rubio, you know, against Fiorina. I mean, he was Hillary Clinton's best friend up there.
Thanks, Kevin, for the call. We'll go next to Randy in Arborvitae. Randy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I can't help but thinking that it was Trump. I was really appalled by it.
Randy, I'm sorry, your line is breaking up. The producer tells me that he thinks he's surprised. He thinks it's ridiculous that Trump is still doing so well. Probably a lot of people, David, within the Republican Party, the establishment side, are thinking the same thing right about now.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it's just unbelievable. I mean, we've seen this before a little bit, right? I mean, we saw this back in 2011 for the 2012 race where, you know, Michelle Bachmann had a moment and Herman Cain had a moment. But each of them quickly faded and they were replaced by the next person, whoever that was, Rick Santorum. The Trump thing is just growing. I mean, his support has actually literally grown in every single poll that has been done. It has been on an upward ascent where now you even have a majority of the party who thinks he is the likely nominee, a plausible nominee, and the best nominee to take on Hillary Clinton.
Talking to David Friedlander with the Daily Beast about last night's Republican debate, you can join in with your reactions and or questions. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Want to get into Jeb Bush, somebody that a lot of people in the establishment liked, had high hopes for coming in. Let's check out a moment that he had with an argument with, it's getting redundant, an argument with Donald Trump. We'll give a listen.
Your brother and your brother's administration gave us Barack Obama because it was such a disaster those last 3 months that Abraham Lincoln couldn't have been elected.
You know what? As it relates to my brother, there's one thing I know for sure. He kept us safe. I don't know if you remember, Donald. You remember the rubble? You remember the firefighter with his arms around it? He sent a clear signal that the United States would be strong and fight Islamic terrorism, and he did keep us safe.
I don't know. You feel safe right now? I don't feel so safe.
So, David, Jeb Bush, one problem he'd been criticized for is not seeming to have an answer when people talk to him about his brother's presidency and about the Iraq War. Is he getting there now with this one thing I know for sure, as he said, line?
That was a great answer, and it was by far his most forceful of the night and his best moment of the night. I mean, I thought Jeb was really one of the few candidates up there who probably actually lost ground last night. He just seems so angry at Trump, at having to debate Trump. I mean, he almost seems trembling with anger that he's even facing Donald Trump. And he almost doesn't quite know how to take him on because Trump is this phenomenon that we haven't quite seen. He doesn't answer questions properly. He spouts Democratic talking points. He talks in non sequiturs and broad strokes. And Bush seemed to freeze up and not really quite know how to take him on, I thought, for most of the night.
I want to mention the happy hour debate briefly. Last time, the first debate, Carly Fiorina was in that earlier undercard sort of debate. She stood out. She made it into the polls, did a little better, made it into this debate. Anything like that happened this time with, what was it, just four candidates in that early debate, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, that sort of kids' table, I guess, as it's called, is getting smaller and smaller, right? Now that Rick Perry dropped out and you know, Jim Gilmore didn't even make the threshold for it. So, you know, Lindsey Graham, I think, had a pretty good night, and Bobby Jindal got some zingers in. You know, but if the main attraction debate probably didn't you know, people were fading from the end and didn't change minds, I can't see how the undercard debate is really going to change matters much.
A lot of a primary race, especially maybe with so many candidates, is money, making sure you have enough money to keep your campaign afloat. You mentioned Rick Perry, some warning signs when he wasn't able to pay some key staffers. Do you see any candidates now really starting to get nervous? Are they going to be able to keep the donations coming in to sustain their campaign till the votes start being cast?
I mean, we live in such a different environment than we did 4 years ago or 8 years ago or however many years ago, where the money is so great and the super PACs are so prevalent that in a way it's really hard to run out of money. And, you know, these campaigns have also gotten cheaper in a way. So if you want to run a sort of lean operation, you can do so pretty easily. I mean, someone like George Pataki is probably not raising a lot of money, but he's raising enough to keep it going. Rick Santorum, enough to keep it going. I actually think your man, Scott Walker, is going to be the one to watch there. It seems as if donors are getting nervous about him and could start looking for other winners.
Right, because the understanding has been he was doing so well early on, he was not running a lean campaign. He was starting a major full-scale operation based on the donation levels he was getting back then.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, if you start seeing people leaving his campaign or staff shake up, I mean, those are usually the sort of drip, drip, drip of the warning signs.
A three-hour tour, this debate. So was the public even watching it by the time it was over?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. I mean, it got bonkers ratings. I mean, there's something like 22 million people tuned in. It definitely would take some staying power to watch it towards the end. I mean, Trump really, you know, even he faded at the end there. And so, you know, how many people were really staying keyed up on it, I think is hard to know at this point.
Now, we talked to you about the Fox debate earlier. One thing it was not was boring, as we talked about. They had very targeted, direct questions, hitting candidates on their negatives. What did you think of the style and the format of this debate?
You know, I really liked it. I mean, I thought it was good to kind of, for the moderator, Jake Tapper, to kind of get them talking about each other and drawing contrasts among themselves while on the debate stage. I mean, I would like to have seen a little bit more of Hugh Hewitt and Dana Bash, frankly. But, you know, I thought it was good because it's one thing to criticize your opponent from afar. It's another thing to criticize them when they're at your elbow. And, you know, and this was a crowd, unlike in the last debate, that was really against Trump. And the room did not work in Trump's favor. You know, in the last debate, there was a huge arena, the big audience, and he was able to, like, get them on his side. And this time, as we heard in some of the clips, the biggest applause lines were when people took it to Donald Trump.
So what are you looking for? What tea leaves are you reading next? What polls are you watching for to see how this second debate changes things, if at all?
I think the big thing is, when does the Trump phenomenon start to end? And, you know, if it doesn't end after this debate, when he seemed flummoxed by Carly Fiorina, when he was really unsure of some answers, when he seemed particularly sophomoric in other answers, if it doesn't end now, when does it end? I mean, if his next poll numbers are even greater than the ones he has currently, then, you know, are we ready to crown him the nominee? I think that'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see how much Fiorina helped her cause. Is she going to really vault into the top tier of candidates? Does Carson, who had a middling debate performance last time and a middling debate performance this time, does that even matter? And then, you know, everyone else there, you sort of saw a little bit of desperation on their faces. They came in with a game plan. They knew they had to execute it. They knew it was one of their last chances. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone else gets a bump.
David, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you.
That was David Friedlander, contributing writer at the Daily Beast, talking to us about last night's Republican primary debate. You can keep sharing your thoughts at the Central Time Facebook page.